second chapter of the book of Proverbs is the voice of a father speaking to his son. It's a father's exhortation on the value of wisdom. And in this passage, as we work our way through it, I want you to observe four particular words, little words, but they are key words in helping us to understand the thrust of this passage this evening. The words if, then, for, and so. If. It's a condition. You must do this, the father is saying to his son. If you are wise, if you have understanding, you will do this. Indeed, if you want wisdom, if you wish to gain understanding, you must do this. If you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures. Certain things will be true if you do these things, if you have this attitude of heart, this inclination of will, this determination of mind. You must do these things if you want to have the benefits. You must receive my words, the wise father says. You must not just hear them. We came into this hall this evening and I asked my son to do something and he carried on what he was doing and I said, did you hear me? And the response came back, yes. And he carried on what he was doing. He didn't receive my words. Well, like a radio receives the signal, perhaps he had received the words, he had heard them, but he wasn't acting upon them. It's not enough for a son to hear wise words. He must receive them, he must take them in and act upon them. Indeed, the next phrase expands on this idea of receiving. What is the way in which we are to receive the words of a wise father? We're to treasure up his commandments. You see, this isn't just hearing. Neither is it simply hearing and acting upon. But rather, it's seeing those words as valuable. Seeing those words, recognizing those words are of benefit. It's not simply acting upon them in order to avoid a scolding. It's acting upon them because we realize that there is real benefit in them. We are to treasure up these commandments, to hoard them like something valuable. And if we do that, if we recognize that when wisdom speaks, what she says or what he says is worth hearing, then we do what verse 2 tells us. We make our ear attentive to wisdom and we incline our heart to understanding. We open up our ears. So that we're always listening. So that we're always ready to hear. Sometimes I have to call two, three, four, or more times before I get any response. Are we like that at times when wisdom speaks to us? When wisdom calls to us, cries out to us? Do those cries fall on deaf ears? Or are our ears attentive to wisdom? And is our heart prepared to receive understanding so that we're tuned in to the wavelength, always ready to hear that voice, and when we hear it speak, our full attention is on it? Yes, the Father goes on to say, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding. You remember last time when we were considering the first chapter, we observed woman wisdom speaking from verse 20 onwards. Wisdom cries aloud in the streets, in the market she raises her voice, at the head of the noisy street she cries out, at the entrance of the city gate she speaks. And there we had this picture of woman wisdom crying out to anyone who would hear. With a loud voice she cries out and invites those who will hear to come to her and to listen to her. Well, here it's the young man who is being encouraged to call out to woman wisdom. Call out for insight. Raise your voice for understanding. Don't wait for wisdom to speak, the Father is saying. Call out for it. Invite wisdom to come to you. Say to wisdom, you are ready, you are listening, you are attentive. You yearn to hear those words that will make you wise and understanding. And then in the fourth verse, he sends his son on a treasure hunt. If you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures. This isn't a half-hearted thing, you see. This requires devotion, dedication, earnestness, searching for treasure, seeking for silver. You see, here are words of wisdom perceived to be valuable. And the young man who recognizes wisdom is of such great value will search for it, will seek it out. Wisdom, we've already observed, is to be found personified in Jesus Christ. Wisdom, of course, is more than knowledge. It's more than knowing facts. Wisdom is rooted in a right relationship with God. And Jesus used this idea of searching and finding to portray what heaven is like. He said in Matthew chapter 13 and verse 44, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. A man found and covered it up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has to buy that field. You see, the kingdom of heaven is worth more than all his possessions combined, so that he's ready to sell it all so that he can have this one treasure that he's found in the field. Again, verse 45 of Matthew 13, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant in search of fine pearls, who on finding one pearl of great value went and sold all that he had and bought it. This is the value that we are to assign to the wisdom that would lead us into a right relationship with God. It is worth giving up everything else for this. It is worth searching for, seeking after, It is worth devoting our time to. The Father says, if you have this kind of attitude with regard to wisdom and understanding, if you are ready to hear, to listen, and to obey, if you will search out for these things, you see, you must do these things if you want the benefits. They won't come accidentally. They will only be found through deliberate action on your part. If. But the if, of course, is only one half of an if-then statement. If this is true, then this follows. And so we find it to be so here. If you receive my words, if you're attentive to wisdom, if you incline your heart to understanding, if you will call out for it, if you will search for it, then, verse 5, you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Verse 9, then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. If you do these things, then this will be true for you. What will be true for you? You will understand the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord, the writer has already indicated in chapter 1, is the beginning of wisdom. It's the foundation of wisdom, a right relationship with God. You will find the knowledge of God. Knowledge not only about God, but knowledge that is found in a right relationship with God. To know God. To be actively in communion with God, in fellowship with God. The search for wisdom leads to God. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. In other words, then when you find wisdom, having searched for it with all your heart, being attentive to it, then you will understand the right way to live. Then you will know what pleases God. Then you will know how to live in harmony with those around you. If you do these things, then, and by implication, and only then, this will be true for you. In other words, if you don't receive the words of the wise father, if you don't treasure up those commandments, if your ear is not attentive to wisdom and your heart is not inclined to understanding, if you don't call out for insight or raise your voice for understanding, if you don't seek for it or search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will not understand the fear of the Lord. Then you will not find the knowledge of God. Then you will not understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. In other words, if you don't do the if part of the clause, the then will not be true for you. You will not know how to live in a right relationship with God or in harmony with others. So there then are two of the words that we must recognise and pinpoint in this passage if we're to understand the thrust of the passage. But there is more. If then, for. What happens when this is true? What happens when you've done the if part, and when the knowledge of God and the fear of the Lord and the understanding of righteousness and justice and equity is true for you, what happens then? What difference does that make? Being in a right relationship with God, what difference does it make? Understanding righteousness and equity, what difference does it make? To know every good path, what will that do for you? Well, the word that tells us what it will do for you is the word for. For begins a section in verse 6 and another section in verse 10. Look at them. Verses 6 through 8. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. So as you search for wisdom, seek it out and treasure it, you discover God. You enter into a right relationship with God. And in an interesting paradox, your search for wisdom means that you find God, and finding God means that you find wisdom. For the Lord is the one who gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. So James says in his epistle, if you lack wisdom, what do? You ask God. He will supply that need. He will give you what you lack. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. It's almost as though hidden in a cave, God has stored up this vast treasure. And when you listen to wisdom, and when you search out for it like hidden treasure, God leads you to it. He causes you to find this great hoard that he has amassed on your behalf, stored it up, ready for you to discover. He will guard your paths. He will watch over the way of the saints. He's always ensuring that those who are searching will find. Those who seek will discover. In the second section, verses 10 through 16. For wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness to walk in ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. Wisdom, when you search for it, wisdom, when you enter into a right relationship with God, wisdom will come into your heart. Knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. What difference will this search and discovery make? It will change your whole attitude, your whole outlook, so that you will be given discretion and understanding to make wise choices, to have good values governing your life, delivering you from evil, leading you into the right paths. This is an idea that will recur throughout the book of Proverbs. Good paths, right paths in contrast to evil paths, dark ways. What happens when you enter into a right relationship with God through receiving wisdom? Your whole life is changed. And then we come to the fourth word, so. This is the final outcome, as it were. If you do this, then this will be true for you. For such and such happens when this is true, so the final outcome will be. And what is the final outcome? We find it in verses 16 through 19. Sorry, 16 through 20. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death, and her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good and keep to the paths of the righteous. Here's the final outcome, and it's presented to us in those first few verses, 17 through 19, in terms of the adulterous woman. She's described as a forbidden woman, as a foreigner, literally, in the Hebrew, as strange, as someone who exists out of the sphere of God's word. Remember, specifically, these words are written within the context of the Jewish legal system. But of course, they have a wider relevance than that. But here is a woman who doesn't conform, you see. She doesn't conform to the standards that have been set. She's strange, she's foreign, she's outside of that safety zone, as it were. And the son, the young man who receives the words of wisdom, who treasures them up, who searches them out, who enters as a result into a right relationship with God and possesses understanding and walks in right paths, will be protected from this woman. Now, she represents far more than simply sexual immorality. It's the whole gamut of sin that is intended to be conveyed here, but is presented in this particular way because the addressee of these comments is a young man, particularly prone to temptation, perhaps in this particular area, and therefore needs to be set on his guard particularly. But as we've already commented in our earlier studies in the book of Proverbs, these Proverbs are not simply for young men. They're for older men too. Neither are they simply for the male gender, but for young women and older women too. Certainly the language is couched in the language of the day with the focus of that time. A father addressing his son, but we must understand it more broadly than that. What is the final outcome of possessing wisdom, of entering into a right relationship with God? Well, verse 20 really sums it up. You will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous. You see, you will not be tempted. The seductress with her smooth words will not be able to tempt you. the man with the silver tongue will not be able to persuade you. You will walk in the way of the good. You will keep to the paths of the righteous, for it is wisdom from God that is governing your walk and guarding your way. And so we find the conclusion, as is has been the pattern thus far, a summary really of the teaching of the passage in verses 21 and 22. The upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. Now, it's possible that this is an allusion to the law and its results, the results of keeping the law or failing to keep the law as it was presented to Israel. You'll remember that within the law of Moses there were conditions. Meeting those conditions meant prospering in the land that was to be given to the Israelites. Failing to meet those conditions to keep the law would mean being separated from the land. So that's possibly what is being referred to here. On the other hand, it may simply be a picture that is being presented. A picture that Jesus Christ himself used concerning the kingdom of heaven. And remember, we've already observed a link here between that searching for hidden treasures being likened by Jesus to the kingdom of heaven. Well, here in these closing verses, we have a similar comparison. For in that same chapter of Matthew's gospel, we have the parable of the seed and of the weeds. The kingdom of heaven, Jesus said, may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in the field. But while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the master of the house came and said to him, Master, did you not sow good seed in the field? How then does it have weeds? He said to them, an enemy has done this. So the servants said to him, then do you want us to go and gather them? But he said, no, lest in gathering the weeds you root up the wheat along with them. Let both grow together until the harvest, and at harvest time I will tell the reapers, gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. There's the parable that Jesus gave. And he interpreted the parable for us. The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed is the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the close of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned with fire, so it will be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all lawbreakers, and throw them into the fiery furnace. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The upright will inhabit the land, and those with integrity will remain in it. They will be rooted there, established there, but the wicked will be cut off from the land. The treacherous will be rooted out of it. They will be destroyed. So where is wisdom to be found? Wisdom is to be found in living upright lives with integrity before God. They will inhabit the land. They will remain in it. They will be blessed, in other words. But the fool, to use the language of Proverbs. The one who doesn't receive the words of wisdom and never enters into a right relationship with God as a result will be cut off, will be rooted out, will be destroyed. Ultimately, you see, the way of wisdom and the way of Christ are one. If you would be wise and have all the benefits of wisdom, then you must know Christ. You must seek for Christ, and you must treasure Christ. He is the wisdom of God. And if you possess him, you possess the treasure of God. So this passage calls us, yes, to treasure wisdom, but more, to treasure Christ. To ensure that we possess him and he possesses us, that we live for him. And we enter into all of his rewards as a result of our unity with him. So, receive words of wisdom. Treasure up those commands. Give attention to them. Incline your heart towards them. Call out even for it. Search for it. And then you will understand the fear of the Lord and the knowledge of God.